Blog Talk Radio.
Patricia Hartman. She has the creator of a Runway Rogue. She's very well known. She does Chanel and Karl Lagerfeld and all kinds of fascinating things. She's also a big advocate for our friend Michael Strider's charity, which we'll be talking about at the end. Hi, Patricia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm really happy to have you here. I'm interested in the creative side of people and what makes you tick. Can you tell a little bit about what was your first memory of models? Who was the person who you were like, oh, I like her?
You know, Cindy Crawford, she was just a couple of years before my time. And she was sort of the first breakout supermodel, if you will. So when I first started modeling and then subsequently got to meet her, I remember that was kind of fun. I thought that was, you know, a big deal. But the whole supermodel era didn't really start until the 90s when I started modeling. So that the word supermodel, I don't think when I started or when I was a little girl, wasn't even really coined yet, you know. So that was just that era that I was, you know, so lucky to be a part of.
Do you think it's interesting that, like, some really famous people were models? Like, Princess Grace was a model. Audrey Hepburn
yes.
was a model. People that
yes.
were supermodels that were faces forever, who were like Susie Parker and people like that. Do you think it's interesting that they were, it wasn't like they were pushed to the side. They were very famous people. In fact, most of them
oh,
went
yeah.
into moving. So how
right.
did how do you differentiate people like that to supermodels?
You know, I think back in the day, let's say in the 40s, 50s, 60s, models were not just models. There were actresses. There were singers. I believe that, you know, at that time, if you wanted to be on a stage as an actress or as a model, you also had to have other ability. You had to be able to sing. I mean, think of Marilyn Monroe, for example. You know, she was a model. She shot a calendar at the very beginning of her career. She was an actress. She also sang. So it's almost like they had different requirements back then, if you will. You know, the 90s supermodel era, you know, late 80s and early 90s, was a little bit different because I feel like the, all of a sudden it became all about the models, you know, it, even if you walked to a very famous designer, it was not only just, oh, who's the designer on the show? Well, who's walking in the show, you know?
Yeah.
So that was what I thought was kind of interesting. It was, and songs were written about it. You remember that, oh, God, Michael, I can't think of his name now, a band called Wham. He wrote a whole supermodel song, and he even had a video with Linda Evangelista and all the supermodels in it. Anyway, yeah, so it was just that era where everyone was really focused on the whole supermodel thing. And, you know, I just thought it was so fun to be part of, you know, just to be part of that. And, but, you know, everything has two sides to it. Sherry, you know, and as glamorous and as great as it was and as it sounds, there's also that flip side. You know, you're very young, typically, when you start. And especially back then, you know, the whole, we, you know, having to fit the sample sizes, having to be very, very thin. You know, I just remember, for example, like sometimes before show season, I would that dreaded measuring tape would come out, you know, when you went to see a designer and they would take your measurements and you know, you're just trying really hard to make sure you make the cut, that you're going to fit the clothes, and, you know, try not to eat very much in the weeks and days prior. And that can be hard on a young person, you know?
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, I mean, that's especially when they're really young, like the 15-year-old, 14 and 15, because your
right.
body is still developing and changing. To deny yourself food is like, that's denying yourself development.
And also, you know, you're trying to fit the mold, basically, and you're trying to fit into these sample sizes. And, you know, when you are young, when you are, you know, maybe 17 or 18, you think you know everything, but you don't. And, you know, and now I'm 47 and I still don't know everything, but I know more than I did back then. So, but these things, they can make a lasting impression on you in terms of future behavior, you know? And I think that is something that, you know, I think a lot of models have struggled with. And you'll always get the girls that were like, oh yeah, you know, I eat cheeseburgers all the time. I never have to watch my weight. I'm sorry, it's BS. I mean, maybe, rarely, occasionally, but typically, no, I never saw any of those girls eat very much food. Because
oh,
if you're 5'10", if you're 5'10", and you have to fit in a size 0, then, you know, something's got to give.
I always rolled my eyes when I read that, you know, oh, yeah, I just eat cheeseburgers and all that. And I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's like when in interviews, you know, when they ask models, like, what part of yourself don't you like? And 80% of our models will tell you, oh, my feet. I don't like my feet. Because what's she going to say? I have an ugly nose, you know? So it's very funny there, like these little standard answers. I remember that models always used to have. It's like, oh, so what do you do to stay so thin? I don't know. I don't do anything. I eat cheeseburgers. So,
yeah,
you know. But, well, there are a few lucky few. I shouldn't say that. You know, there are a few lucky few. But, you know, the other thing is
that can take all that, but not. That's a very small percentage, I would think.
It is a small percentage. And then the other thing that, you know, because I have made an effort until now to, all, you know, to stay in good shape, but to stay in a healthy shape. So the difference is now that I'm eating good food, I'm eating healthy food, I work out. There's a big difference between that and not eating and not working out just to stay thin. But I also notice, you know, like, for example, what I also don't like is skinny shaming. You know, it's not socially acceptable to say to someone, you know, maybe you shouldn't eat that cheeseburger. But somehow it is acceptable to say to someone, oh, my God, girl, eat a cheeseburger. You know, you look like skin and bones. You look like a steak. And that's just, you know, it goes both ways. It's not okay on either side to say that to someone, I find.
How about civility? How about just being nice? How about not saying anything nasty at all?
Well, that's a start. Exactly. That's definitely
that's
a start.
How you,
but
the world was. I mean, I know it's not, but you know, you were saying your age, and I'm 57, and I'm like, I don't think you ever know everything. And the thing is, when you realize you don't know everything, that's when you've reached maturity.
Right, and that's when you keep on learning, and we never stop learning, which is great. You also, I think, as you get older, you gain the ability to maybe analyze things a little bit differently, and be able to look at things from, you know, a slightly different angle, perhaps. And you know, I have children. I have a daughter. She just went off to college to UC Santa Barbara. So I wanted to instill, you know, positive body image and all those things that I think are important for her to have. And I feel like she's a very well-adjusted young lady. And you know, and I have a son. He just turned 16. So for both of those, I think it's important to, you know, have those talks with your kids about not just body image, but, you know, socially, so much with social media right now, there is such an anonymity in some ways in social media that it feels like people, it gives them the right to insult you somehow, like the example with the cheeseburger, you know, because a perfect stranger with some kind of a screen name or handle that I don't recognize, I don't know who that is, can say whatever they want until I block mm-hmm. them. But so that anonymity sometimes I think makes it very easy for people to bully and very hard for people, especially young people, sometimes to, you know, not fight back but be able to ignore it.
I think, you know, when I was a kid, I had bullying, but I think it's scarier to that now because there are strangers you can't see that
right.
are just coming at you, and somehow, from what I understand, there's adults who try to get teenagers to say nasty things about other kids, and it's like,
it's
a realness that's out there I don't like.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But again, I think it's just really important to have that conversation, with your children and to, you know, let them understand that anything out there in cyber world, they're not necessarily your true friends, you know, and to take all of that with a grain of salt. But,
I mean,
you know, like I said, young kids.
That are good and there are people they meet that are bad. I mean, just like, and you have to, I think the conversation also should include using common sense. That's like a missing term nowadays, but it's very important.
Yep. I agree with you. Very, very true. Yep, definitely.
I was just wondering, the little change in subject, but do you have like books that you love or films that you love? Where's your muse or art? What do you like to do in your spare time?
If I had spare time, I mean, everyone has a little bit spare time. It just depends on how you choose to spend it. But yeah, I mean, because of my cosmetic brand Runway Rogue, my plate is pretty full. But in terms of my interests, I'm a very visual person. I've always been a creative and visual person, which is why, you know, I've loved photography always, not just being the model in the photography, but photography in general. When I do find the time, I love to read. I love a good novel. You know, it doesn't have to be Shakespeare. Any good riveting novel will do. I used to read all the time when I was traveling so much during my modeling career, because that was at a time when you didn't have a TV screen on the back of your, you know, on the seat in front of you. And so I always used to read books. I'm trying to think, anything from Michael Crichton to Dan Brown. Just a good novel will always do for me, something that kind of puts you in a different world for a moment.
Yeah, I this tells you what a nerd I was. I used to go to like a party or a dance, and I don't know if you remember, they used to have really thin novels that you could slip into your evening bag.
You would take one with you?
Oh yeah.
You used to take one with you. But then where would you eat it if you're at a party?
Yeah, I would just, because I was not, I mean, if it was a small party with friends, that would be different. But if it was a big party that I didn't know anyone,
I'm like tuck you away in the corner and start reading.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, why not? Now people are on their phone instead. So,
yeah,
hey.
Educating myself.
You know, there's something beautiful about reading a book, and that's why I always used to love to get myself lost in a novel. You know, fiction. I really enjoy fiction because it just takes you away from reality for a moment and puts you in a different world, and I love that. I love that about reading, and I still try to make time sometimes at night before I go to sleep, but, you know, then my eyes close. But if you have any good recommendations for a book, because I'm currently not reading one, so I'll take that.
I can send you a list.
You have more than one.
But no, but I admire the ones you mentioned. I love Dan Brown. I love all of his stories. I love a I love good murder mysteries. I like English murder mystery better than the American, even though first book I ever read was Ellery Queen. As an beyond, you know, Little Women and the stuff you read when you're a little kid. The first book I ever really fell in love with was Ellery Queen and then Agatha Christie Everything. Because Dorothy Sayers was Agatha Christie's favorite writer.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you know what's so sad also, I think a lot of young people don't read that much anymore. And I find that, you know, I notice it with my kids, like my boy, they have certain mandatory reading in school, in language arts. But some of those books, you know, they're literature, they're Shakespeare, they're the classics. And while they're good, I don't necessarily think they always instill a great love for reading in a young child. You know, I almost want to hand my boy a book and say, you know, like a Dan Brown book, and just say, you know what, read this. This will keep you turning the page until 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's how you develop a love for reading. If something becomes mandatory and it's just kind of, you know, at that age, it feels dry and it feels like then they have to learn it and remember it and memorize it. I don't necessarily think that instills a love for reading, in my opinion. You know, I'm sure that a lot of language arts teachers would think I'm wrong about that, but you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it should be choice. I think it should be okay. I have a little trick that I use. When I was working customer service, I was surrounded by people who were much younger than me, who were into gaming and sports, and that's what they did when they were on the internet. That's what they were looking at. It bored the hell out of me. So I said, why don't you guys ever read? And they said, oh, there's no books that interest me. And I said, okay. So when Christmas holiday came around, I gave the guy who's into gaming Ender Game, which is basically what Ender Game starts as a game for the kids and then becomes a serious thing. And then for the guy who's into sports, I gave him, I forgot the name of it, just blacked out. But it was very
But something that he could relate, like that he would find interesting, clearly.
Yeah, it was about football. I can't remember.
Yeah. So there. But that's what I mean. And that's how you get someone to love reading. If they read something that they're riveting, that they just can't put it down, you know? I mean, have you had one of those books I'm sure you have, where you just cannot put that thing down because you need to know what happens next? And then have you ever been really sad? Have you ever been so sad when you finish a book because it was so good, even though you were trying really hard to get to the end, but then you just really bump when you're done because it was so good?
Over and over. Yeah, a lot of books.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with that. But, yeah, like I said, I think it's nice for young people to read. And, you know, I mean, with Kindle, it's so easy now, too. You can read on – I don't know if you're an actual, like, book hard copy person or if you stray towards, you know, downloadable Kindle versions and whatnot. What's your preference on that? I'd like to know.
My opinion is very strange because – I read a lot of the ebooks because a lot of the people I interview send it to me in that form. So that's why I read a lot. But I prefer a book in my hand. I like the feel of a book. I like cuddling in bed with a book. I like being able to flip through the pages, the smell of a book. I love book. I am that way, and that's just, I'm never going to stop.
Yeah. I like books too. I have, you know, ebooks as well, but I agree with you. There's something about an actual book, you know, holding it in your hand, just like you say, turning that page and the smell of it. But anyway, so yeah. But yeah, like I said, I'm also.
You can't cuddle up. You can't cuddle up with a contraption.
True. Very true.
You can cuddle up with a book, with your phone or an e-reader. It's not the same.
Very. Very true. Very true. But yeah, I mean, you were asking, I really would consider myself a very, aside from reading, a very visual person. Like I love looking at, I love looking at photography. I love looking at art. I'm very particular about, you know, my brand, Runway Rogue, the website, the images that are on it, the, you know, everything. I just always want everything to be perfect or, you know, graphic design, things like that. I've always loved that. Also, not that I'm not very good at designing things myself, but I have a vision how I'd like it. You know,
do you
so
like a certain style of art? I mean, like classic Monet or something more modern, or do you like to go to a museum and go to, or a gallery and just look at whatever's there?
I'm very open to new and modern things, but in terms of art that I find beautiful and appealing to me, I'm a little bit more old-fashioned, I think. You know, I love beautiful oil paintings, still lives, classics. So that's probably something I would gravitate towards. But in a museum, you know, anything goes. I mean, I left in L.A., there's so many opportunities to go to museums, and I have traveled the world, and I didn't always have time, you know, to, because it was sort of in and out in one day in various cities. But, you know, when I did have the time, it was always nice to stop in a museum, and it just have to be paintings, like any kind of art, modern or Renaissance or otherwise. It's just beautiful, and it kind of makes you want to think about what inspired people to create it. You know?
Yeah, I know. I think my favorite period is the Impression period, but I also like some stuff from the Renaissance. I mean, who doesn't like Da Vinci or Rembrandt? But I just,
well, yeah.
I mean, you can't not.
right.
But I mean, I love classic art. There's something unique and special about it. I mean, modern artists, fine. There's some really great modern artists that I really do like. But there's just something wonderful about the classics.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And, you know, it's just funny to me sometimes, you know, because even jokingly, I think I forgot where I read this, but it was some kind of a joke where they had a couple of kids. They were giving them blank canvases and a few paintbrushes, and they had them, you know, throw buckets of paint or splatter something, who knows. And then they set up those pieces in a very, very expensive gallery and pretended that this was one of the newest, latest, greatest modern artists of this era, and had people come in, and they were all oohing and aahing over how fabulous, and his vision, and how great, and how they couldn't even imagine what he may have been thinking. Meanwhile, it was done by a couple of five-year-olds. So, you know, a lot of times it's perception with people, too. They think something has to be great because everyone else thinks it's great. And I feel like you got to go with what you like, you know, what you actually really, truly think is beautiful and what appeals to you.
I can't remember what TV series it was, but they were in a gallery, or it was a movie, and this woman comes over and says, "Oh, I really love this. It's just so amazing." And they're like, "That's the alarm."
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. She thought it was an art installation. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, case in point. But yeah, so...
That really cracked me up. I was like, oh, my God, that is so funny. I can't even remember what show it was. I always remember.
No. That's what I mean. It's kind of like that cheat mentality, you know. Everyone, you know, I got to follow. Everyone else likes it, so I got to follow. But yeah.
Oh, and there's this movie called What a Way to Go with Shirley MacLaine, and she has all these amazing actors, Paul Newman, Gene Kelly, Dean Martin, all these great actors acting against her. And one of the actors, Paul Newman, he was supposed to be an artist, and his art just wasn't selling. And then he made this machine, and he had a monkey or a chimpanzee. It was a chimpanzee run the machine, and it would just
generate some art or something.
And he became more and more successful because of the chimpanzee.
Well, see, so there you go. Exactly, that's what I meant. But oh, that's funny.
It's a really funny movie. If you ever get a chance to see it, it's hilarious.
I know. I don't know a lot of the classics because, you know, I grew up in Germany. I was born and raised in Germany, so I didn't move to the United States until, let's see, 1995. So I didn't, you know, as a kid, in Germany, whenever we saw, you know, American movies that were made here, they were always dubbed. They didn't have subtitles, but they actually had German actors, you know, speak the parts. So, you know, I haven't seen a lot of the original classics, but I probably should try to get to that one of these days.
I wouldn't place that as a classic. It's just a really funny movie.
Right. Yeah, I don't know so I don't know. But, yeah.
I mean,
old funny movies. I mean, you know.
But it's just, it's a really funny movie. If you just want, if you're not being judgmental and you just want to sit back and laugh, that's the type of movie it is.
So there. I know. And everyone needs that every once in a while.
Yeah. I mean, she did great movies. I mean, but that wasn't one of the top ones. It was just a really cute movie.
Right.
And I always remember that because the chimpanzee was so cute.
Now I'm probably going to have to go and see it or get it somehow. I don't know. Oh, that's funny. But yeah, I mean, that's my take on art, I suppose. But, you know, whatever
hilarious.
Works, whatever, you know, people like.
Now, I'm going to take a little turn. I wanted to talk about Runway Rogue. What is it? How did you create it? What's it all about?
All right. So Runway Rogue, I launched it in 2017, so it's relatively new. It's a new indie brand, and it is based on my experiences working with some of the world's most iconic makeup artists. That was, during my modeling career, the thing that I loved the most, believe it or not, was that transformation that happened in the makeup chair. There was just something about that, and ever since then, I've always loved makeup, and not really makeup to, you know, hide behind, but just to make yourself feel fabulous and to look good and to feel great. So I launched Runway Rogue 2017, like I said, with a line of, we started with lip color products. So we have lipsticks, matte and satin lipsticks. We have gel lip liners. And more recently, I launched one of my best-selling products. It's so amazing. It's a long-wear liquid lipstick. It's called Pearl Glam. It has a little bit of shimmer in it. And the difference between that and most, or I want to say all other long-wear lipsticks on the market, is that it doesn't feel dry. Because, you know, I don't know if you've ever worn like a long-wear lip product, like a liquid lipstick. It can really feel like nail polish on your lips.
Yeah.
And this one, it's just smooth, it's creamy, and you wait for it to set, and then it doesn't budge for 8 hours. And it's like a little soft focus filter for your lips, you know. And I have it also in these really soft colors. I have bright and bold colors, but I also have, you know, soft colors. I have a shade named Soft Box, which is just this really subtle, soft nude, a little bit of shimmer. But you put it on and it lasts 8 hours and it doesn't feel dry. So that has been a great, great product. That's sort of my breakout product that has been doing really, really well for us. But yeah, so Runway Rogue is my indie brand that I love so much. And everything that I learned during my career from makeup artists is infused in that brand.
Can you talk a little bit about what you learned from makeup artists, little bits that you're willing to give out?
You mean the tricks of the trade? No. For example, I'm sure you've heard of brands like Bobbi Brown and Kevin O'Kwan and Laura Mercier and Francois Nars. All these artists behind the brands, there were makeup artists, and a lot of them still are, and they were makeup artists during the 90s. And they would literally, you know, I would sit in that chair, and it's like this little transformation began. And people always used to call me chameleon as well, because depending on, you know, what the makeup artist did and the hairdresser, it was like this little transformation. And there's just, you know, over the years, I learned what works and what doesn't. And there's, you know, little makeup tricks that you can use to make that little subtle difference. And the reason I started with lip products, lip color products, is because I feel like there's really kind of that one makeup move that can make you feel like $1 million in 1 second, and that's lip color. You don't have to, and it's not a commitment either, because it's not like if you want to do a big change, you change your hair color, that's a commitment. You put on a pretty lipstick, you know, if you love it, you keep it on, or you try something different. So, and I think lip color products are great for, it's such an amazing product for women, you know, and it just makes you feel good and makes you feel sexy and pretty. And now with my long wear liquid lipstick, it doesn't come off either, and it doesn't transfer to, you know, glass or coffee cup. So that's nice. And, so I just really fell in love with the artistry of makeup during my career. And
it's so funny.
That just always stuck with me.
My mother wouldn't let me out of the house unless I had lipstick on. And she hated that. When I was a teenager, it was the 70s, and so I used lip gloss. It had color, but it was lip gloss. And she, I can't see it. I go, well, let me show you. And I give her a kiss on the right on her cheek. I go, there you go.
Oh, we have beautiful lip glosses as well, by the way. You know, every woman has their favorite little product. You know, some women, they will tell me, oh, I'm a gloss girl. I'm a gloss girl. Or other women will tell me, I only like lipsticks. And everyone has their little thing that works for them. So that's why I have a whole range of different types of products. Some are very sheer and very natural. I actually have a gloss that's called Supermodel. That's also one of our best-selling products. It's like a semi-opaque or semi-sheer, if you will, nude shade. And it's just that, it's that little pick-me-up, you know. If you put it on, it just looks gorgeous. And it's not some huge, big statement. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, people often ask me, like, why Runway Rogue? Why did you name it Runway Rogue? And I was lucky enough to be on an actual runway many, many times during my career. But most people aren't. They're not on the runway. But I feel like life is your runway. You know, people want to, women and men, they want to look good in their everyday life situations. And whether that's just for yourself or on a date or a wedding, whatever it is that you're doing, women want to look beautiful. And I feel like life is your runway, you know, for everyone. You don't have to be walking the Chanel show to look fabulous, you know.
I like that. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Do you have a website people can go to?
Yes, it's actually runwayroguebeauty.com. The rogue is like Vogue. Some people always think it's rouge, but it's, you know, rogue spelled like Vogue. It's runwayroguebeauty.com.
Oh, I thought somebody who's a rogue.
Well, yeah, it is. That's what it means, though, like going rogue. But in terms of spelling it, I find that sometimes people, they spell rogue like rouge, but it's rogue. So.
Oh, I see.
You see what I mean? So, and if I say rogue like Vogue, then they go, oh, okay, in terms of the spelling. But yes, it is like going rogue. Because, I said, life's your runway, you know? You don't have to be on one. It looks fabulous anyway.
That's cool. We're going to also talk about something that's near and dear to both our hearts, Michael Strider's Life After Project. Would you like to talk about how that came, that you became involved in it, and what it means to you?
You know, I can't even remember exactly who approached me with Michael's project. I believe it was my agent. Yes, it was my agent, Iconic Focus, because I still model these days, not only for my brand, but otherwise. I just kind of got back into the industry. And they sent out an email, and they said, you know, there's Michael Strider. He has a really great charity. It's called the Life After Project, and he has some information on it. So I clicked on the link, and I looked at, you know, everything that he had to say on the website, and I just really felt that it is a very powerful charity, in my opinion, because so many of us have been affected by tragedy in some way, shape, or form. And by that, I don't just mean suicide. And people, I think, they think that Michael's charity focuses a lot on suicide and suicide prevention, which it also does. And that is wonderful. But it's also about tragedy and coming back and seeing a life at the end of a tunnel after tragedy. And I think sometimes when you're in the midst of something awful or something or a crisis or a life event and life-altering event, you can't see that light at the end of the tunnel, you know. And I think with Michael's charity, it provides resources for people who feel like they can't move on, they can't move forward, they can't go on, they don't see that light, and they need help, and they need someone to talk to, and they need to reach out to someone. And I think it's a very important charity. And I also think, I mean, there's so many great charities, but a lot of things get a lot of attention. Like, for example, Breast Cancer Awareness Month this month. It's amazing. It's great. It gets a lot of attention. It gets so, so, so many donations, which is wonderful. But this, you know, suicide prevention and mental health, it doesn't get nearly as much funding. And I just wish there was more awareness towards that type of thing. You know, this such a sad story, but a young boy on my son's team, his brother committed suicide a week ago. And it's so sad. And that poor family. And I don't know if I'm correct, but you know, suicide, I think to some degree, in some situations, is preventable. And perhaps if that poor young man, if he had, you know, found a way to share what, you know, what it is that was so difficult for him to deal with. And it's heartbreaking. And that's just one story, you know, but there's so many different stories. You know, my husband passed away a few years ago from cancer, and my children were 11 and 13 at the time. And it was very difficult for them and for me to come back from that and to move forward and to go on, you know, because you think at that moment that you can't move forward. That's it. You can't. How are you going to do it? But somehow, you know, kids are resilient, and with the right support and the right support system, there are ways out of that tunnel sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I lost my mom last year, believe me, and my father.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Years ago.
Oh.
So.
I'm sorry.
Even though I do have support, I feel rudderless. I completely understand. You just have to try to make it through. But yeah, I feel so deeply for the people who are suffering. Understand.
I know. I do too, and I think a lot of people can relate because all of us have been affected by some kind of a tragedy, a life-altering event. Some are worse than others, of course, but if there are resources out there where a young person or any person for that matter can, you know, find a way to reach out and get some help, And I also feel like, you know, where if you go to a doctor with a broken arm, they'll put it in a cast and they fix it, and nobody says, nobody blames you. Maybe blame is the wrong word, but, you know, I think our mental health is just as important as our physical health. And there's still that stigma when it comes to mental health. You know, I've heard people say things like, well, so-and-so, what reason does she have to drink?
Wow.
You don't have to have a reason. You know, there's so many different factors that play into so many different things and behaviors and depression. And it's just really, really important to, I think, to take care of your mind as much as you take care of your body, especially also for young people, because they don't always recognize the signs. And I feel like a young person's world, you know, in their teens, late teens, early 20s, their world is so small still, and it's so focused on their immediate surroundings and their social environment, and they can't look forward until much, much later when all that is past, and they're just in that moment, and they feel like they can't cope. And so I think it's very important to talk to young people about that type of thing, and about reaching out, and also, you know, the possibility of reaching out anonymously and provide them with phone numbers and their hotlines. There are things that, you know, because sometimes teenagers, they don't feel comfortable talking to their own parent about what it is that upsets them so very much. So they have to have a different kind of resource, a counselor or a school counselor. But those guys are overworked and they're busy. And, you know, so there just has to be some kind of a resource, I think. And if Michael's charities, the Life After Project, can help with that and, you know, get more funding and resources like that, then I am nothing but supportive for that.
Me too.
As are you, I know.
We're coming to the end. Do you have anything coming up where people can meet up with you? Also, do you have any social media outlets like Instagram, Twitter, or anything that people can touch base with you?
Actually, yes, I do. I have not only my personal, but I also have my brand. So I have my Instagram account for Patricia Hartman. It's patricia.hartman, and Hartman is with two N at the end, the German spelling. And then for my brand, it's runway.rogue, also on Instagram. And Facebook is also Runway Rogue. And I'm not really active on my Facebook account on the Patricia Hartman site, but I'm going to working on that. And I will be at the makeup show in November. That's, I believe, November 10th and 11th in Los Angeles. So that's going to be fun. Runway Rogue will be at the makeup show, and I will be there myself. That's a show for the pro community, pro makeup artists, which, you know, pro makeup artists love Runway Rogue because I have put everything that I know from other pro makeup artists into that brand. So they realize that it is a brand that performs and that they can use it on photo shoots, and that so that's where we're going to be at the makeup show. So anyone who's in LA wants to go to the makeup show, that's where I'll be. November 10th, 11th, yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate you coming in and chatting with me.
Thank you, Sherry. I really enjoyed that as well. And my God, that did go quickly. I thought it's been 10 minutes, and it's been, what, 45?
45. Thank you
45
for chat.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure. All right. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye.